You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. This is Alex Knight, and I am joined by Michael Norton. Episode 86, Microsoft is gunning for Apple. Today on the podcast, Microsoft Build 2017. Lots of incredible updates from Microsoft that we go into in depth in this episode, as well as Google I/O, which is coming up soon, and of course, Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference coming up next month in June 6th. Not too much longer for that. And how does Apple stack up against Amazon, Microsoft, Google, all the incredible services that they've been working on, iterating on for the last couple of years with all the data that they've been collecting? How does that compare and contrast to Apple's approach with enhanced privacy and not collecting as much data, and how that affects their services and the experience that customers have? Stay tuned for that coming up next on The Impromptu. When everything is broken.
So the film industry has award season, but we have developer conference season starting this week with Microsoft's Build conference, where they announced the Windows 10 Fall Creators Update, along with a ton of other stuff. Next week, of course, is Google I/O, and then the second week of June, we have Apple's WWDC. The big show. So I want to get into what Microsoft announced, mainly because a lot of the things they announced were essentially a shot across Apple's bow. So one of the things they did was they announced the Microsoft Graph, which is essentially Microsoft's version of the Google Knowledge Graph, a comprehensive AI platform that allows data to be processed and managed through Cortana and various other APIs. And they have deeply embedded it into the Fall Creators Update. Cortana is getting skills. So the same functionality that Alexa has, Cortana will now be able to gain abilities from various apps. They announced some partnerships there. They announced a new movie editing app called, I think it was called Remix Studio. And it's essentially iMovie, but it incorporates insertable 3D objects that track through the clip and a bunch of other AI stuff. So it can actually compile the best clips for you automatically and do a bunch of other things. Just so many things. They announced a cloud clipboard that would work across all platforms, including iOS.
So like what Apple did with macOS Sierra, basically.
Only better.
Really?
Like better. Way better. So this will let you copy stuff and directly open it. And they showed off the Microsoft keyboard on iOS. I think it's Wordflow. And they showed off functionality where you would tap and it would actually bring up a list of things copied from your Microsoft devices.
Interesting.
So
I'd like to know a little more about how they're doing that securely.
I think it's all powered by the Microsoft Graph. So it's like their version of iCloud, but it's mixed with machine intelligence and a bunch of other stuff. And then we get to the developer stuff. And a lot of that was basically Xcode, we are coming for you. So with their acquisition of Xamarin, Microsoft's been doing a lot of work to create easy cross-platform development. So one thing they did was fully unveiled the final version of Visual Studio for Mac. So it's essentially a reskinned Xamarin Studio plus .NET Core plus some other things. So Visual Studio for Mac will essentially allow someone to build an iOS app without even touching Xcode. And with an iOS app they also announced called Xamarin Live View. Was it Live View? Live something. Not only can you edit entirely in Visual Studio, you can then take that code, connect it to the app, and it will actually run virtually on device. And you can debug in Visual Studio.
That definitely sounds
so
promising.
They have effectively taken Xcode out of the equation.
Now, for non-developers, very quickly, Xamarin was a native, was already a native development environment to build apps for Mac?
It was a development environment to build cross-platform apps. So it was, I can't remember if it was XML or XAML. I think it was XAML. Basically, they had a framework and you could write UI and other stuff in this framework and it would generate native iOS, Android, and Windows. And then Microsoft bought them, incorporated a lot of the Xamarin technology into Visual Studio for Windows. And then they took the cross-platform app Xamarin Studio and they turned that into Visual Studio for Mac. It's been in beta for a few months and they finally launched 1.0 the other day on day one of build. Just a ton of dev improvements, changes. The Linux subsystem in Windows 10, they are now putting full versions of Ubuntu, OpenSUSE, and Fedora on the Windows Store. So you can install three flavors of Linux on your Windows box and use the Linux subsystem to run command line stuff.
Why would Microsoft do that?
Because they are gunning for developers and they are making huge plays to get them. They've been doing that for a while. They've open sourced various things that nobody would have thought they'd ever open source. I mean, .NET itself is now an open platform, effectively. They open sourced the Roslyn compiler, which is kind of the core of everything .NET. They've embraced Node.
I was really surprised about Node.
I
think a lot of people were surprised by that.
Yeah, like everything they've been doing for the past few years has just been huge. They have continually been updating Azure. They just announced a bunch of really cool new features for Azure that allow you to deploy cloud logic to devices locally. That's something that Amazon has been working on for EC2, but that's still in very early preview. This was a fully working preview that is now live right now. So they are catching up to Amazon, and in some ways they are overtaking Amazon now. So they've made some very big plays for developers and they are succeeding.
So, yeah, they're doing a lot of stuff and it's really interesting to see what they're doing with the next major version of the Windows UI stuff. And they're making some fairly big strides there that make a lot of other things, yes, a lot of other operating systems that shall remain nameless look very plain and boring. And they announced a new, was it codename Metro something or other for their new UI?
Well, the old one was Metro. The new one is the Fluent Design System.
Fluent, right.
And it essentially, it reimagines Metro as a UX system for all of the various devices that Windows can be on, all the way up to mixed reality and HoloLens. So that means using light to highlight visual elements, giving things depth, giving things texture.
It's not just like, we're not talking about just some new paint on Windows OS. This is more akin to what Google did with Material Design. This is a very well thought through, cohesive.
I'd say this is
how everything should behave on our platform.
Yeah, I'd say it's still very early days. They are continuing to develop the spec as they move into the fall. It's very much like a working concept at this point. Some apps on Insider Builds have been updated to use Fluent Elements, but they're not quite there yet. And they've even said as much in the panels where they talked about Fluent in more detail. It's like a work in progress, and they're kind of iterating on it as they head towards the final commercial release of the Fall Creators Update, where they will have phase one of Fluent design.
Okay.
So what that means is they're looking at this in stages. Like, they're looking to essentially overhaul what Windows feels like and what it looks like, and they're taking it one step at a time. So the first step, they're going to start adding these transparencies and blur effects and coherent animations to everything, just kind of bring the system to life a bit more, give it depth, take away some of the flat design. And I think the big thing there is the animations, because even if you add a little texture and depth, the animations are what really make a UI. At least one that feels coherent and dynamic.
You're right. Dynamic's a good way, and even in your own words, a lot make it feel alive.
Yeah. So they're going to add the animation libraries for apps in the fall. So it's not ready yet. They will have full animation library support in the fall with the release of the Creators Update. So anyone updating their app to use Fluent, or writing a new app that uses Fluent, all of that will be ready for the new version, but not yet.
Did Microsoft say anything about what's happening with the file system? Because I know they've had continuous little small, like, they, it feels like they've just very much, like, for years, people have been clamoring for a brand new file, a modern file system in Apple, and of course we're now going to get that. But with Microsoft, like with what Apple was doing, they kind of for years and years tacked on things to try to keep the Windows file system, NTFS file system, more kind of with the times, but it was always like tacking stuff on. It was never.
Yeah.
And do you remember, like, years and years, it might be even 10 years ago now, with all the concept designs that were scrapped with, I think this was just with what Vista was supposed to be.
Yes, Longhorn.
They had a WinFS file system that they scrapped. I mean, they scrapped so many things that were really innovative. And what happened to those?
Yeah, that Longhorn was probably the single biggest mistake Microsoft has ever made. They had so much that they wanted to do in Longhorn that would have made Windows a lot better, but it was all scrapped at practically the last minute, and we got this warmed over, half-baked update that we now know as Vista and despise and shame and so on. Ugh, that was a terrible update.
Yeah, but as a Mac user, it's not like you had to exactly live with it.
Well, I mean, back then I did have computer PCs. So I did have to contend with Vista. It wasn't too bad, but the minute Windows 7 showed up, I was like, okay, I'm installing the beta for this.
Well, and I remember the previews for a lot of the Longhorn UI stuff. Like, granted, like now in 2017, it's really old, but back then it just seemed so far ahead of its time with what they were doing.
Oh, yeah.
And it took them, I think it took, honestly, I think a lot of the stuff, the UI animations and translucency and effects, all that stuff that they had in those Longhorn previews, I don't think we really got the full extent of it until, I would say, even Windows 10.
Yeah.
Like, it took a long time to bring, I think, a lot of that polish that they wanted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been a while. I'd say Fluent is probably the closest they've gotten. As for the file system, WinFS is never coming back. I think they did a retrospective and it was like, it would have solved some problems, but ultimately it would have painted them into a corner.
And so maybe they're working on something else entirely different.
It's possible, but at this point, no, not like, there's nothing that's been announced. There's no hints of anything. So it's safe to assume that we're stuck with NTFS for the foreseeable future. Meanwhile, of course, Apple is well underway on their transition to the new APFS, Apple File System.
Right.
That will debut by default in macOS 10.13, whatever that ends up being called.
I know this has kind of become a running joke. I don't know how much you know about the underpinnings of Windows, but... What's happening with the Windows registry? Can they honestly ever
no.
rip that thing out of there without rebuilding Windows?
No, they would have to completely start over.
Yeah.
Everything in Windows today has an underpinning in the registry. Everything is registry keys if you go down far enough. And the only way to get rid of it is essentially to forsake enterprise support and just go, okay, this is the new version of Windows. Everything has been completely revamped. You will lose all of your terrible legacy apps. It all goes away. And that's not going to happen for a while. Like, right now, they're in the midst of transitioning to Universal Windows Platform. So their trajectory I see as this. They move everything onto UWP. They unify the kernel across all the platforms like they've done. They branch off into ARM and have Windows 10 Pro running on ARM devices. They end up with a Surface phone that can become a full Windows 10 PC if you plug it into a monitor. And then at a certain point, once UWP reaches full saturation, once every major app on Windows is on the Windows Store as a universal Windows app, then and only then will they go, okay, now we're completely nuking it and starting over with Universal Windows Platform as the basis for how Windows will work moving forward. So Windows 10S is essentially what Windows will become eventually. Not today, but eventually.
Jeez. Based on everything you just said, I mean, I don't see anything.
It's gonna take a while.
Happen.
It's gonna take a while.
No later than like 6 years in the future.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or no earlier, I should say. Yeah. 6 years in the future. I mean, it's gonna take a long time.
Yeah. At least 5 years, probably closer to 10, because there are a lot of companies that do not upgrade things and take forever.
Yeah.
And that all needs to shift forward.
Yeah, they're going to go kicking and screaming, basically.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's still companies that run Windows 7. So, you know, until they get with the times and move forward, it's going to be difficult. I mean, heck, there's still places where they run IE11 or probably not IE10 anymore. IE10,
there's no,
I think,
reason,
is gone, but
I can understand that to some degree. There's no real reason to upgrade to a new S unless things, there are absolute things that you need. So, for example, like, there's a reason why I'm two operating systems behind. On my Mac, I'm still running Yosemite. And the reason is that because everything is running perfectly stable and I can trust it for the mission critical stuff that I do on it. And Apple is still issuing Safari updates
Mm-hmm. Right. So I think the key decision maker is your browser because of all the security exploits. As soon as your manufacturer, be it Windows, be it Apple, as soon as they stop issuing browser updates, that is when the red flag gets raised. It's time to upgrade your operating system because now you're going to be vulnerable to holes in your browser that will the browser is the gateway into your computer. And if that thing isn't patched, you're going to have problems.
Yeah. Like the giant malware thing going on right now.
So what malware thing are you talking about? Oh, so I'm sorry. You're talking about how a lot of hospitals don't have access to their computers in the United Kingdom right now.
And FedEx and somewhere else.
This just shows you how much we rely on technology.
Mm-hmm.
That just thing gets thrown into chaos. So do you want to just briefly,
okay,
if you want to talk about this, just briefly explain what's happened today.
So right now there is a malware worm called WannaCry that is working its way through the world. It's currently affecting 70 countries. It's the largest attack of its kind in history. And it uses an NSA vulnerability in SMB, which was patched by Microsoft in March. And it loads itself onto your computer and immediately scans all your drives and encrypts any document files that exist on it behind 2048-bit RSA encryption, which is virtually impossible to break currently with most consumer technology. And they demand, I think it's $300 in Bitcoin to unlock it.
So this is ransomware, basically.
Yes. So all of the computers at NHS's hospitals in the UK were affected, effectively shutting down their ability to access patient records and anything of that nature. The worm will encrypt any PDFs, Word documents, PowerPoint presentations, PHP files, ASP files, MP3s, MP4s, movies, AVIs. Basically, if it's media or a document, it's getting encrypted by this thing. So all of your key documents are gone. It locks them behind encryption, and more insidiously, it gets rid of all the shadow copies that exist on the hard drive. So anytime a file is edited or saved, or the hard drive remaps a sector, sometimes you end up with shadow copies of a file that are still there that you can recover. So this worm actively seeks those out and deletes them so that the only copy of the file on your hard drive that remains is behind the encryption, which makes
really
recovery almost impossible.
And there's, I mean, is there anything people can do short of paying the money
to get the files back? Probably not, but don't pay them, obviously. If you have been affected, like, you're screwed. Just start over, basically.
So these networks, I mean, they're going to have to be rebuilt, basically.
Yes.
At a software level.
Yes. Now, things can be, if they have proper backup systems in place, they can wipe the hard drives and start over with backups. If they don't have anything like that set up, then yeah.
Well, that would be incredibly irresponsible of them if a hospital had no backups to
you would
roll
think
back
so.
To a previous state.
You would think so, yes. But
as somebody should be held liable for, accountable for that if they don't.
Yeah, one would think. So the vulnerability exists in SMB, which is a sharing protocol between machines.
Now, is that open source? Because that's something that both, it's a cross-platform thing.
Yes. Right? SMB is supported by Windows and Mac. Right. Mac probably patched it a long time ago. Windows patched it in March. And it's affecting computers that, of course, did not update. So, I mean, the IT departments of these companies and authorities were already incompetent enough not to upgrade the computers to use the latest security updates.
Right. So there was mitigation had they stayed on top of patches. They could have potentially avoided this.
Yes. And if they'd been aware of the vulnerability and patched that, because the other way you can prevent this is by shutting the SMB ports on your network to outside traffic and only allow SMB internally, because it uses SMB to dial back home, at which point it starts doing its thing. And then it uses SMB to travel across any other computer on the network that it can connect to. So that's how it infects an entire hospital after one computer is affected. So yeah, huge attack. Pretty scary. Update Windows, everybody.
Now, fortunately, I haven't heard any reports of that happening here in Canada. I don't think anything has happened yet.
Nothing that I'm aware of currently.
Right. Okay, well, let's keep our fingers crossed and hope that Canadian hospitals are not affected by this, because it's pretty bad.
Yeah, it is. So yeah, that's happening. Back to Windows, though. I think Microsoft is, like, they're gunning for Apple. That's what this is, really. It's like, Apple is the top PC seller currently. They've got a ton of developer love. They've got a ton of creative love. But that's starting to wane because of all the things we've touched on in previous episodes. They're vulnerable. And so with devices like the Surface Studio and a bunch of other things, they're going after creatives. And now with all of these changes to their development platforms, they're going after developers as well. In fact, on the first day of build at the keynote, they said, "We want to make Windows the best dev box available." So it's pretty clear where they're going with that. And if they can deliver on their goal of letting you create iOS apps without needing to touch Xcode,
all the better for them.
Yeah.
And their platform. Everybody wins.
That's the last thing keeping some people on Macs. The fact that they have to compile apps in Xcode.
Right.
Now, so far that limitation is probably not surmountable. Like, you will eventually have to take your code and run it through Xcode and build it for the App Store. There's no way around that. So Xcode is still necessary, but what Microsoft's doing could essentially facilitate a workflow where a dev shop, everybody works on Windows, has a Windows laptop or a Windows desktop. They code in Visual Studio, they make the app, they test it with the Xamarin Live app on their iPhones to make sure it works. And then when it's ready, they make a build on the one Mac in the studio. Like, that's how they could do things. They just get one Mac that has Xcode. They throw their code on it, and they get Xcode to build it, and then do additional testing with that. But that would mean that the dev workflow is entirely Windows at that point.
Yeah, and you know, going back to what you were saying a little bit earlier about how Microsoft is gunning for Apple, which is obviously the case, but it's not just in software that they're trying to do it.
No.
They're doing it in hardware, which of course we've touched on recently.
Yeah.
With the Microsoft, you know, I think it started really with the Surface Studio computer, and mm-hmm. then of course the Surface Notebook computer, which seems very much like a MacBook Air, if not a MacBook Pro in some respects, depending on the configuration. So a lot has changed internally at Microsoft. They just seem to have this, I don't even know if it's renewed focus, but they just seem to have, I don't know what's changed internally. I know they've had management changes and whatnot, but it just seems like they're doing they're doing a lot more, and they're doing more interesting things that than they really ever have in the past. And people seem to have renewed interest in what Microsoft is doing. They're paying attention.
Well, I mean, I attribute this entirely to Satya Nadella becoming CEO. He's a developer. He's a brilliant mind, and he has a vision for where Microsoft needs to go. More so than anyone since Bill Gates, really. I mean, we've talked about Ballmer before. He was Ballmer. I mean, Microsoft was in serious jeopardy if he continued to run it. And then Satya Nadella came in, and it was like, okay, now we've honed our focus. We are mobile first, cloud first, etc. And they just went full tilt into that. And they started open sourcing things left and right. They started embracing open source software in a way that they never would have done before. Like, these are things that I attribute to him, because they're the kinds of things that a developer would want Microsoft to do. And he's a developer. So I think it makes perfect sense.
He's a good fit in that context. And you're right.
And then you've got other great people there, like Joe Belfior, Panos Panay leading the hardware team. Just some really great people running the various departments. And I am pretty sure they've been given a much greater level of autonomy. Like, I would say their roles have now shifted to something similar to what the VPs at Apple have. So, like, Panos Panay in the Surface team, the hardware team, he's like Johnny Ive, basically. Like, what he says goes. He decides what the hardware looks like and what goes into it and how it looks and feels and everything. You don't have somebody at the top near the CEO going, oh, we need to do it like this. He has the final word. And it's really working for them because, I mean, they're not perfect yet, but they're getting there. And they're getting there at an incredibly rapid pace. I mean, the Surface laptop has issues, certainly, and we've touched on those. But at the rate they are releasing new hardware, it's likely that we'll end up with a Surface laptop that's worth buying very soon.
Yeah, it's really interesting watching what Microsoft is doing. Honestly, if you were to ask me even a few years ago, I would have said that there's nothing Microsoft's doing that I'm interested in, but they keep pulling me in. So we'll have to keep watching and seeing what they have to offer us. So what do we have in the last segment of this podcast, Michael?
Well, I am going to tie it back to Apple.
Of course you are.
Of course. So with all of this happening, then you've got I/O next week. Google is undoubtedly going to announce big updates to Google Assistant, their AI platform. They're probably going to announce big updates to all of their apps. Google Photos will probably get a bunch more machine learning features. Machine learning will probably thread through to other stuff in unexpected ways. We might start seeing new Gmail features.
And meanwhile, Apple users have 5 gigabytes of free iCloud storage. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, it's so great. So good. And of course, the major new version of Android, Android O, which some people believe will be called Oreo, but they're not going to license with candy makers every single time, guys, okay? I mean, maybe they'll do it this time, but it's not going to happen every time. So stop throwing it out there. In terms of likely candidates for the name, something with orange, maybe. It's hard to say. There's not a lot of desserts that start with O. There really aren't. I've seen oatmeal cookies thrown around.
That's awful.
That's possible, but yeah, I don't know. Ultimately, it's going to have a ton of cool features. Yeah. It's going to have picture-in-picture. And it's going to have better notifications.
Google keeps leapfrogging Apple's photo solution year over year. I just say, I'm not going to interrupt you. You can go back to the Google I/O stuff, but I swear to God, we've been talking about this iCloud photo issue for like 3 years on this podcast.
Yeah, we have.
Every freaking year.
Every time.
We keep coming back to that. How many years has iCloud had 5 gigabytes of storage? I swear.
Forever.
It's been
since
years.
Since it started.
Anyways, you can go back to Google I/O.
Yeah.
It's sad. It's really sad.
It is. So, I mean, the two major competitors to Apple, they are not slowing down even a bit. Like, Google Assistant is going to be twice as good as it was at I/O last year. They're going to announce a ton of new APIs, a ton of new features. It'll be baked into everything. And meanwhile, all eyes will be on Apple in June at WWDC. What do they have for us? What do they not have for us?
The thing
both
is,
are equally important at
I
this
appreciate
point.
The enhancements to privacy, and last year with differential privacy when that was announced. From a marketing perspective, I don't know how many more years they can go by using the privacy thing as a means of selling what they're doing, because they keep going back to privacy. Well, hey, people, you know, we have superior privacy. Superior privacy has such a great cost of functionality that now all your competitors are leapfrogging you. I don't know how much longer that argument is going to work.
Yeah, it's like either Apple has to ship something that actually works and is private, or they just need to give up on it at this point because the clock is ticking. Either it's done or move on. Like, I get you really care about it, but I am perfectly willing to trust Apple with my data.
Yeah. And like, this concerns me too, because I mean, I know Google I/O hasn't happened yet this year, but based on, you know, if any past I/Os have been an indication, like you were saying, like, even the last two I/Os, they have made substantial improvements to their core services year over year because of the data that they're collecting.
Mm-hmm.
And I know not everybody likes that. And of course, we do want privacy too. There's an inherent right to privacy as well. But to the point that Apple is doing it, their services are getting, if not worse, they're lagging behind continually year over year, and people are noticing it. They really are. Even the ones that are not tech savvy, they may not know the intricate details about why Apple services suck. All they know is that whatever they tried to do with Apple services isn't working. Whether it's, oh, I ran out of 5 gigabytes of storage and I don't want to pay, and now I've lost all my photos because they weren't backed up. Be it that, or Siri doesn't work half the time or doesn't understand what I'm telling it. I mean, this is a big, big deal. So let's just keep our fingers crossed that whatever Apple announces at WWDC this year, that we do see some substantial improvements across their core services. I don't know if it is possible from a technical perspective. Like, how can they keep doing what they're doing with privacy and make their services better? I don't know.
Well, let's say the differential privacy thing works. Let's say they can collect this data and not know a thing about us, and it just works. Then they can actually start using this data to improve everything. But the problem is, in order for these features to work, it has to have already been collecting the data and iterating on it. I mean, they've made great strides in machine learning. They have teams. They have studios that have been working on this stuff forever. I mean, they bought a bunch of companies in Cambridge that were working on AI years ago, and we've had nothing to show for it for years. hopefully this is the year they finally have something.
Well, yeah, and it makes you wonder, but, like, what's been going on? Why all these acquisitions and, like, nothing? We don't see. I mean, it just makes me seem like it makes me think there has to be something that they've been sitting on waiting to release to the world.
Yeah, I mean, that does seem likely, but if they're so focused on privacy, it's like they're trying to make these things with a hand tied behind their back. So it really comes down to, have they managed to make the privacy thing work, or is it this insurmountable barrier to creating something that can actually compete? And if it is a barrier to actually competing, then they have to have a very difficult conversation about whether to give it up or not. And I don't know if they're willing to make the right choice in the name of improving user experience, which is kind of crazy because Apple is the company of user experience. But it depends. Like, they're between a rock and a hard place, because it's like they care so much about user privacy, but they also care so much about user experience. So when those two things are at odds to each other, which do they actually choose? Do they choose to maintain privacy at the cost of user experience, or do they just go ahead and improve the user experience at the cost of privacy?
Indeed.
So I am sure we will find out in June. So yeah. It's going to be an interesting few weeks as we get closer.
Conferences and more conferences and more conferences.
Yep. And more game announcements and E3 and everything.
Yeah.
So stay tuned. We will continue to cover all of it.
You've been listening to the Impromptu on Hologram Radio. I'm Alex Knight, joined by Michael Norton, as always. If you'd like to show your support for this podcast and the work that we do here, the single best way to do that is to go to patreon.com/hologramradio and donate today. Subscribe to the podcast in iTunes to ensure you get every new episode each and every week. And do leave us a review if you have a moment that makes us feel good, as well as helps other people find the podcast. We're also available in Google Play Music, TuneIn, and Stitcher as well if you'd like to stream it there. And wherever else you can find podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at The Impromptu. Michael Norton is at Zen Impulse. I'm at Zero Distraction. And if you'd like to send us feedback the old-fashioned way, you can email us at theimpromptu@hologramradio.org, and that will go to both myself and Michael.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.